Hey, it's Kirsten. Do you feel like you're spending way too much money on supplements? When I started out on my health journey, I was also shocked about how expensive high-quality supplements were, especially as I was upping how many I was taking. That's why when I became a practitioner back in 2018, I started offering my clients a way to save up to 25% off many of their supplements through a company called Wellevate, which is spelled Wellevate. Through Wellevate, you can order many of the supplements that you're already taking, like Pure Encapsulations, Gaia Herbs, Enzymedica, and others at discounts of up to 25% off retail. And shipping is free for orders over $49 within the United States. The only way to buy supplements through Wellevate is through a practitioner, and I will earn a small commission at no additional cost to you while you're saving money. So if you want to start saving upwards of 25% off your supplement bill, go to the resources page on my website at carefullyhealing.com/resources and go to the Wellevate section. You don't have to be a client, just set up your account and start saving. I'm Kirsten Ramstrom, a certified holistic health coach, and welcome to the Quest for Healing podcast. Whether you're just starting out on your health journey or you're farther down your path, I've created this podcast to inspire and inform your health journey through, first, some extraordinary healing stories from real people, second, an exploration of some intriguing healing modalities, and third, through conversations with enterprising people who are making a difference in the health of our world. Welcome to episode 43. Before we get started today, I wanted to let you know that I've started an email list so that I can better reach all of you. The social media algorithms have become so limiting that I know that many of you don't always see what I have going on for you, and I don't want you to miss a thing. So if you want to sign up, just go to my website at carefullyhealing.com and scroll down to the box at the bottom. I promise that I won't be filling up your email. I only plan to send an email once or twice a month when I have something great to tell you. And with that, let's go to this week's episode. My guest today is Dr. Jeff Feinman. Dr. Jeff is a doctor of veterinary medicine and also holds a degree in molecular biology. He's on the faculty of Holistic Actions, which is an online platform focused exclusively on teaching people about integrating conventional and holistic veterinary care for their pets. You may remember Dr. Jeff's name, as he was the veterinarian that Anthony William, the medical medium, mentioned in his Pet Health radio show from 2017. And if you missed that episode, it's available for free on SoundCloud, and I've put a link to it in the show notes as well. This week, Dr. Jeff and I talk about how to view our pet's health holistically, and he has a great framework for helping us out with that. We also talk about how diet and supplementation fit into the picture as well. We covered so many helpful topics here that it really made me wish that I had known all of this years ago, when my soul cat, Mr. Felix, was still in this life. He made it to the ripe old age of 18, but he did struggle with quite a few health issues in his later years. And I know that this information that you're going to hear today would have made a big difference in how I approached his care. I've received so many pet health questions from people in our community that I've asked Dr. Jeff to come back again next week when we're going to do a Q&A and delve into how we can best support our pets when dealing with some common health concerns such as allergies, UTIs, diabetes, and more. So don't forget to tune into that. And so if you're looking for a more holistic way to care for your pet, this episode is for you. And with that, let's dive right in. Dr. Jeff, thank you so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kristen. This is great. Thank you. And thank all your listeners for listening.
I know how much everybody in this community loves their pets. They're such an integral part of our lives. I don't have my Mr. Felix anymore. He's been gone for a few years, but I know how much comfort he gave me. So they are so critical for our health too. And I know everybody wants to take such good care of their pets. And so I'm so excited to have you here today because I know everybody in our community has so many questions about that. So first off, there are a lot of us that are on this medical medium focused journey, and we spend a lot of time focused on pathogens, viruses, and bacteria in our own bodies and how to get rid of those and how to heal our bodies from those. But I know you take a different approach. You take a much more holistic approach to looking at pets' health. So why don't you kick us off by telling us how you think about the overall health of our pets?
What a great way to kick off. I would love to start there. And I guess it's the context that we need, that the context is that animals are more the closer to nature, the natural world. And we're looking at the outer environment, the natural environment. And the way, the context that we approach animal disease from is that the inner environment, that what's called the terrain, the inner terrain, the balance of that is more important than the germs. So the germs, like viruses, bacteria, or other infectious agents, definitely cause disease, or they can trigger disease. They may not be causing the disease, but they're often triggering the body or the terrain to unbalance in such a way, or get into dis-ease in such a way, that we call it a strep infection or a Epstein-Barr infection, or in cats we get a lot of herpes infections. When the reality, you know, at least what my reality based on, you know, observation, is that even two dogs or cats exposed to the same exact pathogen, one gets sick, one doesn't get sick. The difference is the inner terrain, the balance of the inner terrain. And just a quick story about the terrain theory and the backstory of that. I grew up along with the germ theory. The germ theory is the theory of Louis Pasteur, pasteurization, and you know, all infections. And as he was getting older and dying, the discussion of balance, of homeostasis, of what's called the inner terrain was beginning to come out. And at the end of Louis's life, he said, well, you know, I think the inner terrain is more important than the germ. Some people quote it as, you know, the germ is nothing, the terrain is everything. The germ isn't nothing, as we all know, but it's secondary.
So the real idea here is, if we can keep the body, whether it's the human body or the pet body, healthy and in homeostasis and balanced, that even if the germs come along, they shouldn't cause a big issue.
Exactly. And even if they do come along and trigger a problem, if we focus instead of on the problem, which is the symptoms, and we'll get into what that means, if we focus on the terrain, the germ becomes unwelcome and goes away.
Fantastic. And I'm even, as you're saying this, I'm thinking about this in terms of sort of medical medium protocols and a lot of the things we do to make sure that we have more nutrients in our bodies and we get heavy metals out of our bodies. And all of those things just make our bodies more inhospitable to all these germs when they show up. So I love how you think about this.
Exactly. You've just, you know, described in a nutshell what it's really all about, you know, the methods that Anthony teaches all support the body while it heals, while it's able to heal and balance. So thank you.
So why don't you take us through your holistic medical decision-making method? And obviously this is focused on pets, because that is what your background is in, but you have laid this out pretty clearly. And there is a handout that we're going to put in the show notes so that you can download this so you can see more about this. But you do have this HMDM, holistic medical decision-making method. And so why don't you take us through that a little bit?
Well, thanks for asking, because that is the foundation of the three protocols. You know, that's the HMDM protocol that informs everything else that we do. And it's basically just making a method, a simple three-step method for making mindful medical decisions for your pets. Where the first step, maybe the most important one, or it's one of the most important ones, in that it is, what is your goal? Step one is, what is your goal? So if it's an emergency, if your animal is having a horrible trauma or collapses, your goal is save his life. So you rush to the ER and let them do whatever they need to do to save the life. But the vast majority of my work is with chronic diseases, where there is no immediate, may not be an immediate health challenge, but rather lots of little ones that have been going on for a while. The goal is not to get rid of the symptoms of that challenge, but the goal may be rather to improve balance, improve the terrain, to get rid of the symptoms secondarily. The model that we use is also the model that people use in positive psychology, where you don't focus on depression or anxiety or the disease. You focus on being happy and wellness, and the diseases all go away. But the other goal that a lot of people have, the majority of our medical community has, is to get rid of the symptoms. And we have a lot of great ways to support the body while symptoms get better, which is what Anthony teaches. And of course, drugs do that very effectively in that they can get rid of the symptoms within a couple days or hours or right away. But does that help long-term health? So that's the first step, the goal. The second step is you've chosen your goal, let's do research. So the second step is research. What is available to support the body to fix the underlying problem? And the third step is to implement your decision. You make a decision based on research, and then you need to implement it. So it's really just the decision-making process that we use for any decision. You go to Best Buy, and you know, buy the first TV that you see, do research, and you look around, and then you implement and buy it.
That's a wonderful example. Yes. And so when doing this research, one of the things that's become so hard is when I think of research, I think of getting online and trying to find information. And there's so much conflicting information out there these days. And that can become paralyzing. But I know you have some suggestions of ways to do your research. So why don't you talk to us about that a little bit?
So we recommend starting with the most important research that you can do is into your animal symptoms. So what are the symptoms that are unique to your animal versus symptoms that may be from the disease? And in order to know the difference, you might want to build a good animal healing team, which is usually veterinarians, specialists, homeopaths, holistic vets, online research, word of mouth, definitely what Anthony has to say. And a lot of it applies to animals. Some is, it's more human specific. But then that gives the symptoms, your most important research, a little bit more context. And context is really key in making a wise decision. So you're looking at the context of the symptom in your individual animal. You're consulting with a vet care team or an animal healing team about what can be done, what's available to be done. Your research also involves what is being done, what can be done conventionally. Are the only options antibiotics or anti-inflammatories or things that work against the body? Is there any way to deal with this by working with the body, if that is your goal from step one? So that gives it a little bit more context. And it also helps you interpret the symptoms in a more holistic context. You want to look at the context of quality of life, not necessarily getting rid of the individual symptom, unless that is your goal. Mm-hmm. So, and when you look at the context and interpret the symptoms holistically, that does help empower everyone to make a mindful medical decision.
I also think it's so important. We are the ones who know our pets the best. We're around them every day. We know what normal behavior is. And I felt like when I would take Mr. Felix to the vet, I was able to give them context about what his normal behavior was and if he was displaying an unusual behavior and why I was concerned. I know there was one time when I brought him in he was literally just standing there, basically screaming, meowing at me, trying to tell me what was wrong. And I was like, okay, I hear you. You never do this. You've never done this. I understand. And he finally gave me some really clear keys about what the problem was. And that whenever I would go to the vet, they would say, you're really in touch with your pet. But I think it is really important for us to pay attention to that, because it gives us a lot of context, and that can be really helpful to your animal care team too.
That is actually the most important context, because that is the information that the veterinarians often roll their eyes at or don't know what to do with. But those are the clues that something is going on, and, you know, we can implement a change at that stage, even if the tests are all normal, even if everything is unexplained. The symptoms are, there's a class of symptoms called MUS, or medically unexplained symptoms. Well, you don't need to have an answer to know that an upgrade in diet, for example, might be, you know, the trick to supporting the body to keep getting rid of the symptoms.
Fantastic. Step three of implementing a holistic action. You talk about your ASC method. Do you want to expand on that a little bit more?
I would love to. ASC is basically ask what you can do. You know, ASK, and it's an acronym for avoid. So you can either avoid the trigger of the problem, so avoid an allergen, avoid pathogen. S, which is support the body while it heals, which is the vast majority of medicine, or at least of holistic medicine. So supporting is with fresh food, supplementation, good lifestyle, things that you massage, Reiki, flower essences, all these great things. All of Anthony's great information. Support the body while it heals, which is, you know, what you said earlier. And then the C part is cure. And this is theoretical, because cure applies to the underlying energetic imbalance that we believe is the fundamental cause. That is the cause of disease, not necessarily, you know, the trigger. The trigger can be the straw that breaks the camel's back. We'll talk about susceptibility and why some animals have more triggers than others, or lots of allergens, for example, than others. But think of it, I guess, conventionally more like cure of the physiologic imbalance that we know is underlying every symptom. Because a symptom is just a clue that the body is giving us that the cells are not doing their job properly. That imbalance is what needs to be cured, not the symptom that is the clue to the imbalance. Because those changes in behavior that Mr. Felix was showing you were early clues. They were what we called, they're part of the research, an important part of the research called early warning signs. They allow us to detect diseases before they show up on blood tests or other diagnostic tests. And that is often the key to successful outcomes, is early detection.
Fantastic. And so what are some of the imbalances that our pets can have?
This is the hardest thing to grasp, I think, is that the imbalance is just that energetic, physiologic imbalance. It can manifest in lots of different ways. And the ways that it manifests is the symptoms that we then classify as diseases. So we're really just treating one thing. We're treating that imbalance. And the way you address the imbalance will depend on the context of the symptoms. I'll give an example. I had a dog that was having recurrent urinary symptoms, or a urinary imbalance. Well, it turns out that the dog was tied up all day when the honor when, and I'm not can even call her guardian, because the guardian would never tie up their dogs all day. But when she let the dog do what he wanted and be happier, the symptoms, the imbalance went away.
Oh, interesting. So some of that is even emotional with the pets.
Yeah, mental, emotional, and physical are the three levels that the triggers can occur at or come from.
Okay. So in the interest of doing the best we can for our pets to find the best quality of life and the best balance for them, what are your recommendations for sort of a preventative or even maintenance approach to that?
That's a great question, because that health maintenance, that proactive prevention that you're talking about, is what is going to allow animals to have a healthy life of freedom, flexibility, longevity, and live as long as their genes and cosmic karma allow. And you touched on the answer earlier. You pay attention to early clues, just like Mr. Felix showed you at that point. And those earliest clues are often clues given by the symptoms that we call beam, as in a beaming smile, as in a laser beam, as in a tractor beam, as in the balance that we find on a balance beam, you know, when you're a gymnast. The Olympics just finished, I guess.
Yes, they did.
Beam stands for behavior, energy, appetite, and mood. And if the beam is down in any way, then you know that there's an imbalance going on in your animal. It may or may not be reflected by other symptoms, by physical symptoms, but something's going on, and you know, maybe it's time to act, or maybe it's time to observe a little longer. You know, again, it depends on the context of the individual. In a 14-year-old dog, you may not want to wait very long. But a 1-year-old kitty that's having a bad day, let's see how it is tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. If you're looking at their behavior, energy, appetite, and mood, how do you find the context for the different things that are going on in those? How do you think about that so that people can know when to take the next step and how big the next step should be? Because I agree with you, a 1-year-old kitten, yeah, they may not feel so great one day, and that's probably not a big deal. We'll see how they look tomorrow. But yes, when you have an older pet, and when Mr. Felix got older, I was much quicker to take him to the vet when something was going on, because he at that point did have quite a few things going on and I wanted to be careful. So what is your recommendation for people on how to analyze those things and when to take more serious action?
Well, I guess it's all based on a change, you know. So what is the degree of the change? You know, we focus on, we characterize changes based on the four P's. You know, is it prominent? Is it problematic? Is it persistent? And is it peculiar? You know, if you have a one-off weird event of coughing or vomiting and everything else is fine and never happens again, it's probably not cause for immediate aggressive action. Is it always cause for examination, for, you know, for recording, for observing? Yes, it is. But I don't know that, you know, that animal needs necessarily be rushed to the ER. So, home, as in some context, you know, that may be appropriate. You know, you see a one-off symptom and go to the vet or call up somebody and find out what they would do.
Mm-hmm. I think that's great. I think that's a great way to think about it too, because it does give people some context for how to prioritize that. And of course, that falls right into your P theme there with the four P's. But in terms of thinking about how severely you want to react to something. So I think that's very helpful. In terms of early warning signs, what are some of the most common early warning signs that you see that people should pay more attention to, but they don't necessarily?
Awesome, awesome, awesome question. And it's a distinction between what's commonly accepted And what's abnormal? So early warning signs often fall into that common but abnormal. So you go to the vet and your dog has, your kitty has, you know, discharge that comes out a little bit every day. Oh, it's normal. No, not normal. Normal cats don't do that. It really helps to know what all the early warning signs are. And I'll give a plug to this book, which is Dr. Christina's journal, because at the end of the journal is a little card that you can click off that has a whole list of early warning signs.
Fantastic. And Dr. Christina is part of Holistic Actions, correct?
She is my partner in Holistic Actions. That is correct.
I'll put a link in the show notes where people can find that.
There's a copy in the member area, and there's a blog article that lists a lot of early warning signs and that just focuses on early warning signs. And that might be actually the best place, because I believe there's a link in that to buy the journal.
Okay, so we will put a link to the blog in the show notes, and through there, people can find the journal.
That'd be awesome.
Perfect.
The common but abnormal symptoms, which I think you want to go into further because they're so, so important. Think about what a normal dog or cat looks like. And anything that's different than that, you know, doesn't gain weight, they're itchy, they have red ears, they have a little eye redness or eye discharge. Kitties that drink water, if they're on a species appropriate diet, cats don't drink water. Cats are desert dwellers. They evolved as desert dwellers. And when they're on a fresh food, a species appropriate diet, they don't drink. If you kitty is on fresh food diet and he's drinking, that's an early warning sign. Cats that vomit all the time. You know, Dr. Pitcairn calls vomiting cats, you know, their hobby. You know, cats vomit as a hobby. But if they're vomiting hairballs all the time, or over-grooming, or, you know, aggressive, or those can be early warning signs.
Oh, fantastic. And I'm really looking forward to this, because in our second episode that we're going to tape, we're going to go into some of the things like that. And so many of these are things that Mr. Felix dealt with. So I'm so looking forward to digging into those. But we're going to do that in the second episode, where we do a lot more of the Q&A. So perfect. So one of the things that I wanted to dig into now, because this has been super helpful. So the idea is, the more we can get our pets into homeostasis and in balance, the less chance that they have to essentially succumb to anything that is coming at them. But when they already have symptoms, in our medical medium community, we deal with symptoms all the time, right? So much of our focus ends up being on dealing with the symptoms and not on this sort of higher level homeostasis in our bodies. And our conversation is definitely going to make me start thinking more on that bigger picture, homeostasis picture, because I think it's so important. But we are very used to focusing on the symptoms. And so, do pets get viruses and bacteria and infections and things like that, like us humans do?
They do. They have their own, you know, their own classes. Usually, you know, bugs are often species specific, depending on the virus or bacteria. But the same strategy still does apply, in that if they have a virus, we can get them, you know, as well balanced and as vital as possible, then the effects from that virus are either minimal, or the virus actually goes away, or the bacteria, you know, actually is no longer present. And we see that frequently, where, you know, for example, diarrhea is diagnosed as a Campylobacter or Salmonella problem, when that's actually a secondary Campylobacter or Salmonella problem. And if we balance out the GI tract and the underlying, you know, imbalance, then the second follow-up is frequently negative. You know, there's no more Campylobacter, there's no more diarrhea, there's no more Salmonella, because the body did its job. Its job is to remain in balance, which is why what we teach is called the vitality imbalance system, because it's based on building vitality, which is life energy, life force energy, and balancing it out as, you know, homeostatic mechanisms, as you described. Homeostasis is balance.
Fantastic.
And I just want to say one more word about symptoms and what do you do when they're there, the bad ones. Is it okay if I talk a bit about myself and my own symptoms?
Of course, absolutely.
Okay. Well, I myself, this all my approach came about, or I discovered the approach of, which actually is the approach of balance, homeopathy, Ayurveda, traditional Chinese medicine, because of my own genetic disease that was a mystery disease for, gosh, 40 years almost. When I was 14, I started showing abnormal symptoms, and there was no diagnosis, no way of the mystery disease. And the strategies that we're talking about still work today. I still have symptoms. As you know, last week had a flare-up of one of my life-limiting symptoms. And instead of focusing on the antis that would get rid of the symptoms at that moment, I've been focusing on my terrain building, getting outside, breathing fresh air, doing my breaths of joy, you know, lots of yoga. And, you know, I'm pretty much back to that state of balance. And that's the same approach that we are recommending for animals, that we focus on balance and not the individual symptoms, even when there are adverse ones. And never be scared of symptoms. Symptoms in our book are always, always, always to be embraced like good friends. Symptoms are clues to what's going on in the body.
Fantastic. And they can be so foretelling of bigger problems to come if we ignore them. And it is nice that pets' bodies and our bodies give us a heads up before things get too bad, right?
They almost always do. But the one thing I do want to mention is that symptoms can be both external and internal. So your animal may look fine to you, but on examination, deep palpation, or blood tests, or other diagnostic tests, something may be going on. High liver values, for example, is very common in the vet world, or a heart murmur, or, you know, something abnormal internally that you wouldn't see externally. And that can be dealt with by the same exact strategy. We see blood counts going from anemia up to normal. We see liver enzymes going back to normal, pretty much all of them. We see even blood tests, diagnostic tests normalizing just by focusing on the inner terrain. I'll give you an example, a 10-month-old kitty that the people contacted me a couple days ago, and he's got a very high white count, very low red count, and it's about to go to an internist, which is a great idea. But at the same time, we're going to be focusing on building the inner terrain, because it's very possible by the time they go to the internist that those blood work abnormalities will have resolved just by focusing on, you know, supporting the body while it does its job.
And so ways that we support that inner terrain, it sounds like food would be one of them. Supplements are something else I'm hoping we can talk a little bit about. But before we delve into food, you were just saying that in your own case, getting outside, doing yoga, getting grounded, things like that are very beneficial to you. What are some of the things on that level that are helpful for our pets?
Well, those are the other two protocols that we teach at HA, as far as, you know, we start with the HMDM protocol, then launch into the happiness protocol. And then there's something that keeps our pets in tip-top shape called the terrain optimizing protocol, or TOP. And the happiness protocol is just like it sounds. It's based on positive psychology, the model of balance And it's not just psychological. It's using the power of happiness, the power of breathing, the power of connection, the power of engaging with people, engaging with the environment and pets to help them heal. And it's very, very easy. It's much easier to do in pets than in people, because they don't have the cognitive baggage for the word about their diagnosis or the word about the disease. 99.9% of dogs and cats I know go outside, and the first thing they do is they're like, they start doing their own puppy pranayama. And that's what you want to promote. You want to promote as much sniffing as possible. You want to promote as much engaging with the environment or connecting with the environment as possible. And those things will scientifically raise the body's ability to heal. And the terrain optimizing protocol is just, you know, the things that we eat that we've been talking about. You know, as far as fresh food versus processed food, appropriate supplementation when necessary, supporting organs, all things that Anthony teaches are all part of the terrain optimizing protocol.
Fantastic. So why don't we dig a little bit into food? With Mr. Felix, I had him on prescription food most of the time I had him because he had had UTI issues and kidney issues. And the doctors always said, you got to just give him this food. Food was, it was such an issue for us because he didn't like this and Sometimes they would tell me, try to feed him some fruits and vegetables. He had no interest in those whatsoever. And so what I want to know from you is, what is the best diet that we should be feeding our pets? And we'll use dogs and cats as the example here. I realize people have a wider variety of pets than that, but for the general audience, we'll just stick to dogs and cats. What is the diet that they're supposed to have? What is sort of their optimal eating?
That's a great question. And it's so easy to answer. And Hippocrates told us that let food be our medicine. Well, let nature be our guide to the best food to eat. What is species appropriate? What did a dog evolve to eat? What did a cat evolve to eat? And the answer, of course, isn't processed cooked foods, but rather fresh foods that they, you know, kitties hunt and eat, bugs, small critters, you know, all kinds of meat-based items. Dogs are mainly meat-based, but they can often eat, you know, veggies and things they forage in the wild, but the best food is what the species is meant to be eating. So for people, you know, we really should be vegans. You know, we should be more plant-based. Herbivores should be more plant-based. They are more plant-based. I don't know too many horses that, you know, that like meat. But yeah, sorry, you know, sorry for all the vegans. But yeah, they should be dogs and cat species. Appropriate diet is meat.
Okay. So if the dearly departed Mr. Felix was still with us, what is an example of a meal that I could put together for him?
Well, that's a great question and very important because it depends on the context. If you have time to prepare the meal, there are all kinds of different ways of doing that. But the easiest is just get one of the raw, frozen diets designed for dogs or cats. They frequently have muscle meat mixed with organ meat, mixed with glands, bones, all the things that make up an animal. And that's what you feed. You can pour it out of a bag, just like you pour, you know, kibble out of a bag. It's very convenient, but it stays in the freezer.
So that's frozen, fresh cat food, essentially, that you get at the grocery store. That's essentially all meat.
Usually, there are a few grocery stores carrying it now in freezers departments, but it's usually one of the pet stores. You know, even some of the bigger chains now are carrying frozen raw diets for dogs and cats.
So it's frozen raw. So that's good to know. And that contains, it even contains the bones, huh?
Because the biggest issue with preparing your own diet often for dog or cat is often their higher calcium requirements than we have. And they develop calcium deficiencies, but ground up bone and other calcium supplements can actually, you know, balance out the diet. It becomes more of a problem for people that are feeding muscle meat only that doesn't contain the bone. Then you need to add supplemental calcium, you know, along with other ingredients that balance out the diet. I mean, because that's the one and only virtue of a commercial diet, is that it's balanced. We're taught that dogs and cats are fine with eating the same food every day for all their lives. Well, if you feed that way, then you want that food to be balanced.
Right. If you're going to feed them that every day, it has to be right.
But that would be like a Special K feeding Special K every day. It's complete balanced nutrition, but it's not very vital. And this is, you know, the focus of everything we do is to build vitality. The highest vitality, the highest, you know, amount of energy in food is fresh food.
And if you wanted to make that yourself, if you had the time and the energy to make it yourself, how would you recommend doing that? Do you have any tips for that?
There are tons of recipes on the HA website. Dr. Becker has a wonderful book on, you know, doing that yourself. There's a bunch of books out there. Raw Natural Nutrition talks about how to do it with raw, but about 10% of the people I work with don't really want to do a raw diet, no matter what. But they can still do a fresh food diet. Even if you go from a dry food, which is perhaps the lowest energy food out there, to a canned food, which is more meat-based, and add 25% of fresh food to that, then you can do a big service to improving the vitality and healing ability of your dog and cat.
Okay. I noticed in your Holistic Actions Academy, you have a free class called Fundamentals, with a hyphen between fun and dementals. And one of the things they have in there is a fresh feeding guide, which is looked like a great resource for people who are trying to add more fresh food to their pet's diet. So that would be another great resource for people. And that is contained within this wonderful 5-step course that you have in there.
And those are the 5 keys to building health. And that free course, yeah, is another great way to learn the fundamentals. And yes, there is a hyphen because we try to make everything fun, because this goes back to the happiness protocol, that the goal for our dogs and cats, as perhaps it should be for us, is to have fun and be happy.
Amen to that.
Now, my favorite pose in yoga is happy baby.
Perfect. I love it. And so in terms of dogs, for cats, we've established that most of what they should be eating is essentially meat. Is that the same for dogs?
Yep, pretty much. They can survive on, and they do fine with, fruits and veggies and other ingredients. Dogs are a little bit more omnivorous. You know, a lot of dogs in the world today are scavengers. They eat and they survive by eating out of the garbage can, what they find in the garbage or the back. Maybe they eat the bun along with the leftover burger. Maybe, you know, me and Archie, you know, we rescued a dog 3 years ago named Archie. He is super food motivated. So he's become our compost heap. So we don't compost anymore. He just gets it all. And talking about preparing, now food, my wife loves her Instapot, because whatever veggies she's making, some extras go in the Instapot, and that becomes part of a stew that Archie gets as part of his raw food every once in a while, based on the balance of his poops, because fruits and veggies can loosen the poops.
Yep. Awesome. This is a question I have for you. Lots of pet food contains liver, which, as we've all learned from Anthony William, is the filter for the body. And so for ourselves, we don't want to eat liver because, I mean, for goodness sakes, we're all trying to clean out our livers because we know they're a mess. And the assumption that we're all making is most other animals' livers are a mess too. Is liver safe for our pets to eat?
It is safe. And the key word to what you said is filter. In a filter, pretty much things often go through the filter. It's much more harmful for a pet to have extra weight on them because that fat holds on to the toxins. And overweight pets are predisposed to all kinds of health conditions. I'd much rather see an overweight pet eating liver and getting his weight down. But liver is among one of the dirty organs in the body. And we do strongly recommend, if you're able to, stick with organic liver. But yes, we do recommend feeding of liver, which is highly nutritious for dogs and cats. And that's going to bring me to the other thing I hear almost every day, which is a really, really important part of the cat and dog diet, and that's eggs.
I was going to go there next, too.
Eggs are among the best food for dogs and cats, in my opinion. And not just the yolks, not just the whites. They're imbalanced if you feed one versus the other, but you feed both together. That could be raw, that could be lightly scrambled, any way that your pet likes it. But just like the liver, and actually even more important than a liver, and perhaps you want it to be from good eggs. The energy of the animal that laid the eggs, if they're unhappy, if they're caged, unhappy birds, you probably don't want to be using those eggs. And, organic, free-range, happy chickens that are laying because they want to, because this love, because these are their little babies. Then that's an awesome source of vitality.
Okay, fantastic. And so you think that the nutritional benefits for our pets from eggs overwhelms any opportunity that those might have to feed any of the bugs, pathogens, anything else in this case?
For dogs and cats, for sure.
Okay, fantastic. I appreciate you answering that because that's a question that's definitely out there. I know one of the things that you recommend to people is a wild blueberry and kale smoothie, which I believe is just for dogs, correct?
Nope. Dogs and cats. Cats may or may not eat it. But yeah, that is our biggest bang for the buck. Whenever there's some slight imbalance, and especially allergic and arthritic issues, respond really well to the wild blueberry and kale smoothie, which is just one-to-one, wild blueberries with chopped organic, and you want kale to be organic because it's so contaminated, but chopped up and then blenderized. So you add them one-to-one in the blender, and you can add about a quarter or a half cup to your dog's food for each meal. That will help support the body while it balances out the immune system because it's chock full of goodness.
That would be easy to make as we're making our heavy metal detox blueberry smoothies in the morning too.
For sure. And they can share that with you as well. Your heavy metal smoothies, or we've got our celery juice, ongoing celery juice challenge. Now that's a couple of years of the experience, and it can help dogs and cats the way it can help people. But in my experience, the good number of dogs and cats not so fond of celery juice. I think I know 1 out of 10 cats that will drink it. And on an empty stomach, mixed in with the food, they might. But by itself, it's hard.
Mm-hmm. So if your pet will drink it, that's really good for them.
Correct.
Fantastic. And in terms of supplementation, I know that Anthony has said that there are some supplements that are beneficial for our pets. Do you recommend supplementation like that?
It depends. It depends on the diet. It depends on the context of the whole individual. As they get older, probably. It's great to support them with a wide variety of, of different kinds of nutrients, vitamins, B vitamins, methyl donors, antioxidants. But the key there is variety. So the more variety they're getting in their diet, the less they need supplementation. But if you're supporting a health challenge, it often pays to supplement. We focus on a lot of whole food-based supplements because our approach is all based on energy, the energy to heal, and artificial anything requires energy by the body to process. And food-based nutrients don't require the same energy.
So are there supplements that we should focus on for our pets?
Well, it depends. Vitamin D, zinc, B vitamins are all wonderful things to focus on to begin with. But again, it depends on the source, depends on the individual. Everything really depends on the context of the disease of the individual. Usually we'll use things like a multivitamin that's food-based to try and keep them healthier as they age, a rotation of antioxidants. The blueberry smoothie, blueberry kale smoothie will provide a bunch of that, but there are specific ones that we can use depending on the organs that need the most support. But it really all depends on the individual. There are some great, Peter Tobias has some great general support as far as food-based nutrients, minerals, antioxidants. So it's going to also depend on the source. It's like you mentioned at the beginning, frequently we do our research mainly on the internet and based on reviews. Well, that's an important piece of the picture. And that's what we're looking at, is that we need these important pieces, but they're not the answer. Just like conventional medicine is really, really important piece of the bigger holistic picture of quality of life that we define as freedom and flexibility. Our animals should be able to live a good animal life, without fears, without the restrictions of their inability to meet people, meet other animals, or do anything.
Mm-hmm. And so would you recommend that if people are considering supplements like this, that they consult their vet first and talk about, essentially establish the appropriate context for their pet?
That would be wonderful, but it depends on the framework that the veterinarian is couched in. If you go to a carpenter that only has a hammer, everything is going to look like a nail. So yeah, it would be awesome to check with your holistic vet or another vet that may have experience with supplementation, because supplements are becoming a part of mainstream veterinary medicine the way they are in people as well, and largely because of people like you, Kristen. So thank you. I appreciate it. When I started practicing, there was not a single supplement on the vet shelves. In fact, things like fish oils or glucosamine or all these things are now mainstream supplements that are on veterinarian shelves. So yeah, they can often help.
I feel like it's sort of the same as when we are trying to establish our protocols for ourselves. Sometimes it can be helpful to work with a practitioner or a health coach to determine what are the most appropriate supplements that we should be taking. So I'm thinking that working with your holistic vet and trying to find one that's of the same mind as you can be really helpful in trying to target that for your pet as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. For sure. It's a really, really important part of research, as far as research that can help support the healing of the individual. Part of the issue, though, is that many of the holistic vets are focused only on support. It'd be great to support and try and cure at the same time.
Absolutely.
The better the balance becomes, the less you need to support the healing.
Absolutely. Well, I want to wrap up here. I'm so excited that you're coming back for the next episode, because we're going to do some Q&A on some of the specific things that pets deal with, some of the issues that they have. But this, as a wonderful overview, has been so helpful. Thank you so much, Dr. Jeff. I really appreciate this.
You're welcome. It really, truly is my privilege, pleasure. And so thank you. Getting the word out is so, so important. But you're so welcome.
And if people want to find you online or on social media, where should they look?
Well, the best place is holisticactions.com. We also have a member group on Facebook, but I don't spend a lot of time there. Most of my time is spent on the Holistic Actions Forum, which is not on Facebook. And that's accessed through holisticactions.com. When you join membership as an all-access member, you get access to the forum, where anyone right now can search the forum for the, you know, the kind of advice that we give. And that's just holisticactions.com/forum.
Fantastic. And I know you have the Holistic Actions Academy on there, which we mentioned a couple minutes ago, because you have the free fundamentals program on there. But why don't you tell us a little bit about the other subscription-based programs that you have on there?
Sure. It's my pleasure. We started 5 years ago by trying to give, you know, affordable access to all the wisdom of the holistic pets that are out there that are part of our faculty and adjunct faculty. And right now we have around 6 faculty full-time, around 20 or 30 adjunct faculty. And they're all accessible via what's now called the All Access membership. All Access provides people with the ability to ask questions on a forum. We have webinars that support people once a week, and they get a 15-minute free HMDM, holistic medical decision-making call with myself or one of the other vets or pet professionals every month, because that provides the answers to a lot of the holistic vet questions. And that's all available, you know, for the all access price. But many people, $50 a month is a big chunk. Premium membership is $14-$15 a month, and that provides recorded access to all of our weekly webinars for the past number of years. So a bunch of different webinars with holistic vets all over the world. For example, this week we have one coming up with Dr. Dodds. We have another one coming up with Dr. Ihor Basco, who's an expert in traditional Chinese medicine and mushrooms and other supplements in dogs and cats. Really changes week by week, but it's all focused on diseases and symptoms. So this, for example, is our blood month. So we're focusing on things like immune-mediated hemolytic anemia and blood diseases from vaccines. And that's what, you know, Monday's webinars can be about. But, you know, then there's the ones every week after that until September start to focus on your eye symptoms. And we just try to gather experts in different areas that talk about holistic ways to help various diseases and symptoms, which is, you know, how we think about or classify disease.
Fantastic. That sounds like it would be really helpful for people.
One more thing which I forgot is the premium also gives digital access to anything that we produce, we put in the member area. So there are ebooks, there are reports, there are full books. You know, there's a cat care book, a wonderful cat care book from one of our adjunct faculty, Dr. Jean Hovey, who's wonderful. So there's a lot of good stuff, and that's a great way to do your research. There are courses in Lyme disease, courses on hospice care. You can watch any of this. You can do any of this for as long as you're a premium member. So you can join for a month and watch everything, and that's it.
Perfect. My goodness. I wish I had known that there were resources like that out there when I was a pet mom, because that would have been so helpful. So thank you for doing all of that.
You're welcome. And thank you for asking.
Well, thank you so much for being on this week. I really appreciate it. And we will look forward to next week when we go through our Q&A.
It's my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you again. And I can't wait to see you.
Thank you.
All right.
Please remember to tune in again next week for part two of my conversation with Dr. Jeff, where we'll dive deeper into a whole variety of specific pet health issues like arthritis, fleas and ticks, and allergies. For a free download of Dr. Jeff's Holistic Actions, Holistic Medical Decision-Making Guide, which we referred to as HMDM in this episode, you can find that at podcast.carefullyhealing.com/HMDM. In addition, Dr. Jeff has kindly offered $10 off the first month of an all-access membership for the Holistic Actions Academy. Just go to the Holistic Actions website at holisticactions.com, click on HA Academy, and use the discount code HAPPYPET10, and that's all one word, happy pet and then the number 10. I'll also include a link to this in the show notes. Show notes for this episode, episode 43, are available on my website at carefullyhealing.com/podcast, and will include not only the link to the HMDM guide, but also links to many of the other things that we referenced today. If you're looking for additional support on your own health journey, you can learn more about how we can work together directly by going to my health coaching website at carefullyhealing.com or by finding me on social media on Instagram at Carefully Healing with Kirsten or on Facebook at Carefully Healing. If you've been enjoying the Quest for Healing podcast, please leave a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. Thank you for joining me today on the Quest for Healing podcast. These discussions are not intended to provide medical advice, but rather to give you examples of methods and modalities that you may find interesting, informative, or helpful. Please work with your doctor as you undertake your own health journey. Hey, it's Kirsten. Before I started out on my health journey, I didn't know how poisonous many of the cleaners I used in my home were. Then when I started trying to clean the toxins out of my body, I started to question if the cleaners I was using were just adding back more. And how does that make sense when we're using toxic chemicals to get things clean? So imagine how excited I was when I found non-toxic, fragrance-free, essential oil-free Branch Basics cleaners. Now I use them for many things around my house, including scrubbing my kitchen and bathroom, cleaning my juicer, and as the laundry detergent for cleaning my clothes. Plus, it's also the soap that I use to wash my fruit because it's also sodium lauryl sulfate free. So check out branchbasics.com. Their starter kits make it so easy to get started, and you can use my code CAREFULLYHEALING, which is all one word, for 15% off your purchase. And because I always want to be upfront with you, this is an affiliate link, so I will earn a small commission if you buy using my code. But I only recommend this product because I love it and use it myself. So if you're ready to start cleaning your home with a healthier cleaner, go to branchbasics.com.